Talk. WhatsApp Pepper on 072-567-1567.
It's time for Book Club, and today's Book Club on Cape Talk is brought to you by Bargain Books. Visit a store near you today for range, value, service and convenience. Now, just a little bit of bookish news to share with you before I introduce you to today's author. Very good news indeed for our readers in the audience. The Franschhoek Literary Festival has a green light to go ahead as an in-person event this year. Delighted to tell you that the event is going to be taking place 13 to 15 May. More than 85 authors already confirmed to participate. There will still be a handful of virtual events as well, but the main focus is back to an in-person festival, celebrating reading and celebrating writers in South Africa and beyond. Capacity is still going to be dictated by COVID regulations, so fingers crossed. Might those 50% restrictions be dropped on the 15th of March? If so, there will be more tickets available than might be the case now. But as a result, we're waiting a little while before tickets are actually launched for sale. What is going to happen is this. On the 18th of March, the first ticket offering goes live, and that is to those who have subscribed as members of the Franschhoek Literary Festival. They will get priority access to tickets from the 18th of March, and then they go live to the rest of the general public from the 25th of March onwards. And once again, should the regulations change in the interim, obviously there will be more tickets available to purchase than there would be were they to go live today. Membership, by the way, you also get a 15% discount on ticket prices. So it really is worth considering signing up as a member of the FLF to get that lower price and to get the priority access. The cost of membership is 50 Rand per month or 500 Rand per year. And if you want to sign up, you can do so on the website www.flf.co.za. Two other things to mention. One is that please note they are making it entrance to the event conditional on either proof of vaccination or proof of a negative COVID test within the last 72 hours. If you want to read more about that, please do check out their website. And the other thing to tell you is that I'm very excited to have been invited to host two segments with authors we've already spoken to on the show in the past couple of months. Remember Dr. Emmanuel Taban and the incredible story of the boy who never gave up, who walked all the way across Africa to South Africa to study, to become a doctor. He is going to be chatting to me at the festival, as is Rusty Labuschagne, whose book about his imprisonment in Zimbabwe, We're Breaking Chains, we shared with you late last year. So both of them on the lineup, and the rest of the author list to be kept under wraps for just another week or so until tickets go live on the 18th of March. So once again, if you want a book and you want to get priority access and that discount, please do consider signing up as a member of the Franschhoek Literary Festival on flf.co.za.
You're with Cape Talk.
This is Pippa Hudson on Lunch.
Now, we're back into the world of fiction for Book Club today, but it's fiction that touches on an all-too-real subject that affects so many families. It is a great pleasure to welcome back to the studio local writer Paula Marais. Paula, when I went back in my notes to check, it's actually 2014, I think, we last had you in studio, which seems incredible. Paula was with us talking then about her work on postnatal depression and about her novel Shadow Self, which touched on mental health issues as well, particularly as they affect overstressed working mothers, something many of us could relate to. But her latest novel, going back to the issue of mental health struggles and their impact on the family unit, though this time specifically focused on teen mental health and on suicidal ideation. The novel in question is called A Nuclear Family, subtitled A Novel of Mental Illness, Marriage and Murder. What a combination. Paula, lovely to have you back with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And it is a real combination because it is partly a family drama, but also becomes a bit of a police procedural towards the end, yes, as well. So there is something for quite a lot of genre readers in here. I mean, so much focus on teen mental health issues, particularly given the impact of lockdown. But I would imagine you were probably working on this book well before we ever heard the words COVID-19.
Yes, teen mental health and health, mental health in general has always interested me. I'm actually studying to become a psychologist at the moment.
Wow, okay.
So I'm in my honors year, studying and doing practicals now. So it's always been an interest. And I mean, I have children of my own. One is 12, just 12, and the other one is 15. So it's, you know, the interest is there because I see a lot of that age children around me, my children, their friends. And I think they've taken COVID really, really hard. And yeah, it's just watching this. It is more relevant than ever before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hats off to you. That's amazing to go back to study something that's always been a passion. Because I know you've already done all the studies in the languages and linguistics, and you've worked and written and traveled and edited and published. So that's in itself a whole conversation to be had about finding the courage to go back and study a passion later. It's not later in life. We're not that old.
No, not too old. Too learn something new.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed the experience of going back to studies?
I have actually. I think I like studying and I like learning, and that's been really great. But also I won't stop writing. I'll continue to write, and my experiences inform my books. So it's another way of growing myself, because I think when you're editing, I do a lot of editing, a lot of writing. That's quite a lonely career.
Yeah.
And with COVID, it became even lonelier because I used to write in a coffee shop. And obviously, you couldn't do that in COVID. So it was also a way of opening up my world to other points of view.
Now, what this novel so clearly illustrates is that the impact of mental health struggles, that impact is not just felt by the person who is going through the struggle themselves, that it washes over onto everybody around them, and who are all affected in their own way and deal with the consequences and the aftermath. Now, at the center of this novel, A Nuclear Family, is at first glance an ordinary middle-class Cape Town family, the Lowes. There's the mom, the dad, the two kids, the dog, the house in the suburbs. Everything looks picture perfect on the surface. Also very ordinary, until the day that the main character, Alice, comes home to find that her 11-year-old son, Albert, has tried to hang himself. Paula, and that moment, 11 years old, your brain goes, how is that even possible that a child could be that distressed so young? And then you think for a second, most of us, unfortunately, are in a position of knowing a family that's been touched either by suicide or attempted suicide by ever younger children. It really is something you've got to be super aware of, even in those tween years.
Yeah, and 11 actually isn't uncommon. Mm. You know, in the research that I've done, in the one night in Red Cross Hospital, of the suicide attempts, they were all boys within that age range. So 11 to about 14, and they were all boys in that one particular night. So it seems to be that boys are as vulnerable as girls. And I think often people talk about girls having vulnerable mental health. But I've definitely felt that boys are equally vulnerable, but maybe they can't talk about it in the same way.
If not more so, because there is the expectation that the facade must be kept up of being strong.
And also, boys are more practical in certain ways. I mean, obviously, I'm generalizing, and they often get it more right and in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
So for me, in a way, male teen mental health is even more interesting because it's not the one touched upon usually.
Paula, you mentioned going to Red Cross, so you obviously must have done quite a lot of research. What sort of research did you do? Who did you speak to?
So I spoke to psychologists, and there's a scene in the mountains, so I did a lot of research with Brent Jennings, who heads up Mountain Rescue.
Okay.
So we had long chats, and he was fabulous and really offered me details on, you know, what your brain would look like if it's squashed on the rock below, and you know, stuff like that. He was really, really fabulous about giving details and who would be in the mountain first and who would be in the mountain later. And then in terms of the mental health thing, a lot of it's my own life experience in terms of people that I meet and that sort of thing. But generally, I do a lot of research.
I just want to share, if I may, a brief quote from the book at this point, because as much as it is the story of Albert and what Albert has gone through, this is also the story of Alice and Alice's marriage, and Alice as a mother and as a woman. And as I said at the start of the book, on the surface, this looks like a happy marriage and a happy family. And Alice is forced to sort of relook at everything after her son makes this drastic attempt on his life. And she writes, speaks at the beginning, because the chapters sort of flip between different voices, which is really interesting because you get insight into the different characters' state of mind and different view of what's going on around you. But Alice writes, the problem was that she and Bruce, who's her husband, had different perspectives on just about everything. Discipline, she was lenient, he was dictatorial. Money, she was casual, he was miserly. Sex, she was restrained, he was uninhibited. Children, she gave too much, he gave too little. Time, she had none of her own. He protected his, doing whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. The only thing that seemed to align for them was their love for each other. So while they disagreed, there was always that one inevitable truth. Whatever happened, it was them against the world. Well, that is certainly what she thought until Albert tipped the world off its axis. I loved that description because I think there's so much that many of us will relate to in that description of the division of time and personal time among parents. That's very pertinent, but also the shifting of the world on its axis. An event like this, even if not successful, Paula, turns everything upside down that you thought you knew about your family and the way the world is.
Well, I think there's also that level of trust that you have with your child. Before that, you trust that your child is safe, but after that, your child is never safe again. Because you, when we talk to psychiatrists and psychologists about suicide and suicide attempts, if somebody really wants to get it done, they will, generally. And so there's as much as you can do to protect that child. You can lock the knives away, you can lock away the ropes and the everything. You can do everything, but ultimately your child is not completely safe, because if their mental health has deteriorated that badly, you may not have the control over the situation that you as a parent would like to have.
There is that saying that a mother is only ever as happy as her unhappiest child, and that really shines through in the in this book. Paula, I mean, one of the characters who is introduced into the story is the tutor, Leo, who is brought into the home to help homeschool Albert and as he recovers. And he's introduced to the home by the father without any discussion with Alice beforehand. So initially she really resents this character who just is imposed on her. And I couldn't help thinking, reading that, it's not only about him being imposed on her, not her decision, that maybe Alice resents the fact of what he represents, that she as a mother on her own is not enough to save and help Albert.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a tough thing for any mother to recognize. We all go through it at some point, that you do realize at some point your early days of being everything to your child, the caregiver, the feeder, the provider of everything they need, those are out the window very early on. And it's quite hard for some people to let go of that.
That's really true. And I think in this case, because the male role model, the dad, Bruce, doesn't quite get Albert. Well, that's an understatement.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't get this crazy kid at all. So Albert needs another male a role model who will get him. And it turns out that Leo is that person, which is great, but she doesn't realize that this is going to be the case. And certainly it's a total invasion of her home that suddenly this person's there teaching her child when she thought she was managing perfectly well on her own.
We've all had that experience in the last 2 years, haven't we? So many of us ended up trying to be all things to our children by the circumstances of lockdown. And I'm not surprised. In fact, I'm only surprised that more families didn't unravel at the seams a bit than have happened. Paula, I mean, I really enjoyed the book went from being sort of initially a deep sort of psychological family intensive investigation of relationships and husband and wife relationships and father son and we didn't even give a mention to the sister who is also a key part of this family, but then as you said towards the end veers into really accurate, believable sort of procedural crime drama, and the scenes on the mountain were really, really believable. You could picture exactly what was happening, and anybody who's been part of a rescue, I think, will relate to that. So it's very well done. Where do our listeners find a copy if they'd like to read it for themselves?
Well, it's available on Amazon. They can get the Kindle version, or if they want a hard copy, they can get it via my website, which is paulamurray.com.
Okay.
Eventually, it does eventually filter down into Takealot and Loot and those kind of places, but it hasn't filtered through there yet. So it's available on my website and, you know, just the usual way.
Okay, yeah. So paulamurray.com, or look for it on Amazon if you want to buy the Kindle version. Look, you're already busy with an honours, but dare I ask, is there another book already in the making?
Yes, I've started another one, also slightly teenagery, and because actually my focus in my studies is going to be gifted adolescents, so that's where I'm going towards. So that's where a lot of my focus is. So I'm keeping the theme. Something that happens at a sleepover.
Ooh, watch the space for more on that one when it's ready. Paula Murray, lovely to have you back with us in studio after all these years, and congratulations on the new book.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
The book is called A Nuclear Family, a novel of mental illness, marriage, and murder.